ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 3, Chapter 1, Texts 39 and 40. We heard Vindura inquiring about Yudhisthira, then about Bhima, then about Arjuna. So who's next? Nakula and Sahadeva. Vidura's speaking to Uddhava. Are the twin brothers who are protected by their brothers doing well? Just as the eye is always protected by the eyelid, they are protected by the sons of Pritha, who snatched back their rightful kingdom from the hands of their enemy Duryodhana, just as Garuda snatched nectar from the mouth of Indra, the thunderbolt carrier. So there's mention in the purport, no detail, and I'm not familiar with this incident where Indra, the king of heaven, carries a thunderbolt in his hand and is very strong, yet Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, was able to snatch nectar from his mouth. Anybody know that story? Similarly, Duryodhan was as strong as the king of heaven, and still the sons of Pritha, the Pandavas, were able to snatch away their kingdom from Duryodhana. Both Garuda and the Partas were pet devotees of the Lord, and thus it was possible for them to face such strong enemies. Pet devotee means like favorite devotees, very special. One can become a pet devotee of Krishna. That's really special. So, who's more powerful? It would seem that Lord Indra, compared to Garuda, he's the king of heaven with his thunderbolt weapon, more powerful is Indra. Garuda is a bird, but because of Garuda's intimate relation with the Lord, Garuda was able to snatch nectar from the mouth of Indra and carry it away. And similarly, the Pandavas, being so intimately connected to Krishna, were empowered in an incredible way to take back the kingdom that rightfully belonged to them from the hand of Duryodhan, because they were so dear to Krishna. I've not read it, but I've heard description of the scene where Krishna, in the presence of both Arjuna and Duryodhan, Krishna indicated that he wouldn't fight in the battle, because he was the cousin of both, so he didn't want to be on this side or be on that side. So Krishna indicated that he would give his armies to one side and he would be on the other side but wouldn't fight. And he gave the choice first to Duryodhana. It's something like he was in a reclining position. So Duryodhan immediately went to Krishna's head and he said, I'll take your armies, please. And Arjuna went to Krishna's feet and said, I'll take you, please. So they both got what they wanted. But by having Krishna on one side, just as Sanjaya says to Dhritarashtra, wherever there are Krishna and Arjuna, there's sure to be victory, opulence. And what's the other? Virtue or something. Virtue or fame or something. So mention is also made in the verse that the three brothers, elder brothers, Yudhisthira, Arjuna and Bhima, they gave protection to Nakula and Sahadev. But it specifically refers to those three as the sons of Kunti. Yeah. They are always protected by the sons of Pritha. Who was the mother of Nakula and Sahadev? Madri. Although, so those three are properly, as you know, technically, they're the Pandavas. Or excuse me, sons of Pritha. They're all three are Pandavas, sons of Pandu. But Pritha, O son of Pritha, can refer to the three brothers. So Kunti received a mantra, and when Kunti received the mantra, she tested it out, gave it a dry run. And from that, she called the sun god, and Karna was born before she was married. And then after she was married, the three sons of Pandu were born of respective demigods. Yamaraj, Vayu, and Indra. But then poor Madri, she had no sons. So she expressed her feelings to her husband. So her husband went to Kunti and said, can you let her use that mantra? Obliging her husband, she gave the mantra to Madri, and the Ashvini Kumaras were the son, the fathers of Nakula and Sahadev. And then Pandu was thinking, maybe I should have another son. So he went again to Kunti and said, can you give your permission for Madri to use this mantra again? And Madri was very angry. Kunti was very angry. I gave the mantra once and two sons were born. What can be said if she uses the mantra again? Who knows how many sons will be born? No. So that was it, five sons. Two of them sons of Madri. Prabhupada writes, Vidura's inquiry was about the youngest brothers of the Pandavas, namely Nakula and Sahadev. These twin brothers were the sons of Madri, the stepmother of the other Pandavas. But although they were stepbrothers, because Kunti took charge of them after the departure of Madri with her husband Maharaj Pandu, the Kula and Sahadev were as good as the other three Pandavas, Yudhisthira, Bhima, and Arjuna. The five brothers are known as the in the world as regular brothers. The three elder Pandavas took care of the younger brothers, just as eyelids take care of the eye. Vidura was anxious to know whether, after winning back their own kingdom from the hands of Duryodhana, the younger brothers were still living happily under the care of their elder brothers. Meaning, you know, in political matters, not amongst pure devotees, but those who aren't pure devotees, intrigue very easily ensues when there's control and wealth and property and those kinds of things. Good people can become corrupt very easily by contact with wealth and power. So he wanted to know, are they still being taken care of now that the Pandavas have their kingdom? So, after discussing Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadeva, who's next? Kunti. Oh, my Lord, is Pritha still living? She lived only for the sake of her fatherless children. Otherwise, it was impossible for her to live without King Pandu, who was the greatest commander and who alone conquered the four directions simply with the help of a second bow. Doesn't describe what that means, the second bow. But here's what Prabhupada writes in the purport. He speaks in the purport about the sati ritual and then its abuse after time. A faithful wife cannot live without her lord, the husband, and therefore all widows used to voluntarily embrace the burning fire which consumed the dead husband. This system was very common in India because all the wives were chaste and faithful to their husbands. Later on, with the advent of the age of Kali, the wives gradually began to be less adherent to their husbands. And the voluntary embrace of the fire by the widows became a thing of the past. Very recently, the system was abolished, since the voluntary system had become a forcible social custom. That's clear, right? A forcible social custom. Paragraph. When Maharaj Pandu died, both his wives, namely Kunti and Madri, were prepared to embrace the fire. But Madri requested Kunti to live for the sake of the younger children, the five Pandavas. This was agreed upon by Kunti at the added request of Vyasadeva. In spite of her great bereavement, Kunti decided to live, not to enjoy life in the absence of her husband, but only to give protection to the children. This incident is referred to here by Vidura because he knew all about the facts regarding his sister-in-law Kunti Devi. It is understood that Maharaj Pandu was a great warrior and that he alone, with the help of a bow and arrow, could conquer the world's four directions. In the absence of such a husband, it was almost impossible for Kunti to live, even as a widow, but she had to do it for the sake of the five children. Regularly in the Mahabharata, Pandu is, whenever he's referred to, he was a great warrior. A very interesting personality. All each of the characters in Mahabharata were interesting personalities. He was a powerful warrior, and yet he didn't like opulent palace life. He liked simple life in the country. And that was the circumstance from which he ruled. I'm going to read from Mahabharata, the description of the decision made jointly by Kunti and Madri with the advice of Vyasadeva, what was the right thing for Kunti to do. So the scene is there. Kunti has just found that her husband has died. Madri informed her, brought her to the place where Pandu was lying, and explained the whole situation. Rather than going into the detail of the situation, Madri was horrified at the outcome. She described how she tried to prevent her husband from the act that would bring about his death. She described that to Kunti that it was as if he was determined to see that the Rishi's curse would be fulfilled, that if he would have contact with either of his wives, he would at once die. Hearing everything, Kunti prayed for strength. Somehow this was God's arrangement. The ways of providence were always mysterious. But what should be done now? What was her duty? She gently stroked the head of her younger co-wife and said, "O Madri, there's only one recourse for me. Please allow me to ascend to heaven with our Lord. Please rise up and raise our children. Give me the body, and tightly embracing it, I shall enter fire." Madri shook her head. She pleaded with Kunti. "The monarch died as he approached me. His desire was not satiated. Should it not be I who goes to the region of the dead to gratify him? I am still clasping him even now and will not allow him to go without me. O Kunti, please let me go." Madri felt incapable of bringing the children up herself. Kunti would be far better, a far better mother. Madri had seen her gentle dealings with the boys. She would surely treat them equally. Madri begged Kunti's permission to enter the fire with Pandu. "O Kunti, the king sought me with desire. Grant me leave to fulfill that desire. You would be doing me the greatest good. I shall leave my sons in your care without any fear." Kunti looked compassionately upon Madri as she lay with her arms around Pandu and bathed him with her tears. The noble Kunti felt her heart torn. Although, as the elder wife, it was her privilege to choose to follow the king to the next world, how could she deny Madri? It was to her that Pandu had been attracted. If Madri were to live, she would live with the memory of that brief and terrible moment all her life. Guilt would consume her, along with the anguish of being unable to fulfill her Lord's last desire. Although she longed to follow her husband, Kunti could not be so cruel to her co-wife. She touched Madri gently and said, "So be it." Kunti then went with a heavy heart toward the ashram. When the boys heard of their father's death, they were struck with grief. They ran, crying, to where he lay and fell on the ground like powerful lions rolling on the earth. Madri blessed them tearfully and told them that she would be ascending the pyre with her husband. She asked her two sons to remain with Kunti and serve her steadfastly. The boys were shocked, too shocked to reply. They watched as the rishis built a pyre next to the king's body and then, while reciting mantras, placed his body upon the pyre. They asked Yudhisthira to step forward. The prince, blinded with tears, set fire to the pyre and stood back. As the flames rose, Madri folded her palms and fell upon her lord's body, tightly holding. As the fire consumed them both, within minutes, both she and Pandu were gone. the grief-stricken Kunti then asked the rishis what she could do. The rishis advised Kunti to return to Hastinapur with her boys as soon as possible. They told her they would accompany her, carrying the remains of Pandu and Madri with them. The large number of rishis, siddhas, and charanas formed a procession, walking ahead of Kunti and her sons. By their mystical power, they all arrived at Hastinapur within a short time. Kunti then presented herself at the northern gate, and messengers ran swiftly to inform the king. Upon hearing of her arrival, Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Satyavati, and all the other Kuru elders hurried to the gate, followed by a large number of citizens who heard that an assembly of celestials had arrived. Everyone was struck with wonder to see the brilliant rishis surrounded by siddhas and charanas. People came out in the thousands to see those divine beings, etc. The rishis then introduced some greeting. The rishis then introduced each of Pandu's sons and revealed the identities of their divine fathers. He told them how the boys had been trained in Vedic knowledge and had grown to youthhood in the company of rishis and siddhas. Glancing around the large concourse of men who had assembled outside the city, the rishi said, "Steadily adhering to virtue and leaving behind him these children, Pandu has ascended to the higher worlds. The chaste Madri has gone with him. Now his sons should be accepted as the kingdom's rightful heirs." The rishi pointed to a bier lying nearby, covered with a white cloth. "Here are the remains of Pandu and his wife. Perform the funeral rites and accept his sons as if they were your own. We shall now depart." When the rishi stopped speaking, he, along with all the other rishis and celestial beings, suddenly vanished. Then the entrance Bhishma takes the entourage into the city and they become settled. So Vidura is asking about the welfare of Kunti, who, only for the sake of raising her children and the children of Madri, did she remain. The virtue of Kunti stands as a wonderful example. Her willingness to sacrifice her own interest for the sake of her younger co-queen of Pandu and the sake of her children and Madri's children, her life was simply a life of sacrifice on the principles of compassion and religious principle. This is the way of life of a virtuous person. They have no self-interest, and that which they do or do not do, it's just guided by elevated principle. There's no mention specifically in this version of Mahabharata that Vyasadeva's role, there's mention in the purport, probably an expanded role of Mahabharata, or version of Mahabharata, that the in difficult circumstances, the Pandavas would turn to Vyasadeva or Domya or different personalities to take guidance. And once receiving that guidance, that was, it wasn't like, what's your opinion? It was, what should we do? And when they heard what they should do, that's what they did. So Kunti was so guided. Vyasadeva, being the father of Pandu and Dhritarashtra and Vidura, naturally had continued affection for them all. And the sons of Pandu naturally were the objects of affection for Vyasadeva. So he advised Kunti, and she followed that advice. She remained behind and took up the service of caring for the Pandavas. And as a result, so much association with Krishna. Okay, so I'll end with that and see if there's any discussion. Hare Krishna.